this training, if you'd like it, David@dmeltzer.com. David@dmeltzer.com is about disrupting this cycle. It's about closing the gap between intention and action so we can stop getting ready to get ready and start doing. 100% of the things you do now get done. If you don't have a list of what to do now and to do next, you're creating interference, you're slowing things down, and you need to understand you are just polishing a form of procrastination. Whether you are a leader, creator, entrepreneur, your success will be determined by your ability to act with clarity, with harmony, with focus, and even in uncertainty. Let's shift from overthinking to execution and unlock the results that only movement can create. Nothing happens until we move. The first lesson in understanding that overthinking, stop overthinking and start doing, is overthinking is the enemy of execution. Overthinking, a polished form of procrastination, makes us feel overwhelmed, and that stops us from prioritization. Overthinking is fear pretending to be logic. It interferes with our energy, our intuition, our intelligence, our action. It drains our energy through that interference, stalls action, and convinces us that planning is progress. But nothing happens until we move. So many talented entrepreneurs that I work with spend months analyzing a new product. So many authors I work with have so many different forms of and renditions of their book that a new book, a new product idea never launches. Some people have written 6 books and never launched one just because they're stuck in the overthinking mode and not the action mode. Meanwhile, so many competitors go live with a less polished version and gain market share. They make money, they help people, they have fun. They don't just sit around dreaming about what they want. Not to say you shouldn't utilize the AAA strategy to, yes, get alignment with what's doing well, what's stable and you think is doing well, and then take action and prepare for adjustment. But you can't spend your whole life in alignment, especially today where the speed in which the uncertainty and the change of value emotion happens so quickly. You are going to be further and farther behind if you stick yourself in analysis when you can find out how the capabilities that you have with your product, service, solution, or brand are aligned with what's doing well, what's stable, and what you think is doing well. It's time to take action. Stop procrastinating with the polished form of overthinking, analysis, logic. Execution will be the focus of attention every day. Execution is placing into respect the order of intention by doing and saying and then thinking, believing, and feeling. Progress comes from the imperfect action, not the perfect idea. I will repeat that. Your progress in the pursuit of your potential, not what other people want, not what other people think, not what's missing, not what you don't have. Progress comes from the imperfect action, not the perfect idea. We need to reframe overthinking as a form of resistance, of interference, of lengthening the distance of resistance. We want to shorten that with the wisdom and the faith that our actions will protect us, promote us, love, and perfect us. Not to say we haven't gotten alignment with what's doing well, what's stable, what we think is doing well with the capabilities that we have. But once we do, it's time to move. We all need to commit to testing one idea each and every day, even if it's not quote unquote perfect. Make a commitment to test and go. Don't wait until you know. Test and go. Don't wait until you know. We need to make sure that overthinking does not become the interference or the enemy of our execution. The second lesson is to escape the loop. Escape the mental loop trap. Get out of the infinite loop, the circle, the repetitive nature of creating this interference. Our brains, they crave certainty, and there's only one certainty in the future, and that's the guarantee of God, the 24 hours each and every day that he's guaranteed us in our human experience, defined by the time your heart starts till it stops. The brains crave the certainty, so give it to it. Apply time to the activities, the negotiable, non-negotiable, hybrid negotiable, to the plan, the unplanned, to your sleep, to the activity you get paid for and activity you don't get paid for. Our brains crave certainty. So replay the same scenario, looking for the perfect outcome, but that loop will never end. Put time into its place and apply the prioritization and the application of why. So many professionals that I work with debate switching careers for months and months and years, thinking through every scenario, but yet remain stuck in the same role, living the myth of Sisyphus, living their lives like tubes, food in and food out every day, year after year. But take the example of the previous at Scott Simon's show there with Ramon, the gentleman who has 2,200 calls in a business that he started while he was working another business because he applied a certain amount of time and then shifted the amount of time that he spent on what he thought was his main gig into what became his main gig that used to be his side gig. He was just applying his why and utilizing the certainty of time, the 24 hours that you're guaranteed every day in the human experience, the time your heart starts till the time it stops. Every day, you're allotted 24 hours for those behaviors. But most people overthink it and they don't do it. They don't do it for a minimum amount of time every day, the only certainty that exists. And our brains crave it. And so they stick into attachment to the perfect outcome, and that loop never ends. Collapse the timeline. Ask yourself, with what I'm doing right now, will it matter in 10 minutes? Will it matter in 10 months? Will it matter in 10 years? For the sake of what am I going to do this? Overthinking is only going to stop me from doing. Let's use this 10-10-10 rule to break the analysis and paralysis that exists by asking us, for the sake of what am I doing it, and will it matter in 10 minutes? 10 months or 10 years. Shorten these decision cycles to create momentum. Create the momentum by applying the time and the why to the activities you get paid for, unpaid for, sleep, and as well as planned and unplanned. Utilize time to align, not to overthink. Align with what's doing well, what's stable, and you think is doing well. And you will escape the mental loop trap that exists. The third lesson, count the hidden costs of inaction. Go ahead and quantify. If you don't quantify, you can't measure, you can't improve. Somebody needs to mute, by the way. There's some background sound, Nick, so if you can make sure everybody's muted. Count the hidden costs of inaction. Every moment spent overthinking, not aligning, but overthinking, is a moment you're not creating, connecting, and growing. Inaction has an opportunity cost. It has a price, a quantitative measurement. You can measure it with time, emotion, value, emotionally, financially, energetically. These hidden costs are far greater than the actual hard costs. Delaying a key conversation with a partner leads to a missed opportunity and an ongoing resentment, guilt, interference that will drain our focus for weeks, months, and years. Delaying other opportunities, options, and touches of favor will cause that response to the reaction to the fear, utilizing the opportunity costs for weeks, months, and years. Perfection is the lowest standard because it doesn't exist. There is no perfect. It is out of the realm. It's, to me, the bottom of the line. It's something in which I pursue my perfection, my potential, but focus in on the process by not overthinking, but aligning instead, and then taking action in preparing for adjusting. There is no more analysis, logic, overthinking. So many times we don't realize it, but we cannot change an emotion with logic. How many times have you gone to bed going, let it go, let it go, let it go, and wake up thinking about the same thing? How many times have we tried to out logic an emotion? There's only one thing at the same frequency as emotion, and that is action, and action will resolve that emotional interference and put you into a divine direction, or create a detour in its divinity, or allow in the predisposition of surrender the divine time that it takes to get to where you want to be or better. Each time you delay a decision, write it down, make it real, align it with what's doing well, what's stable, and what you think is doing. Write it down, make it real, quantify it. Each and every time you delay a decision, quantify the opportunity cost of what it has cost you in time, value, emotions, time, peace, money, or relationships. Write it down, quantify it. Don't overthink it. Utilize it to show you the hidden costs of inaction, the opportunity costs of inaction. Lesson number four, turn your worry, the duplicative negative in your life, right? Worry is not only a wasted emotion, but it's a duplicative negative because it interferes worrying with where you want to be. It creates overthinking, but it also is wishing for what you don't want. Turn worry into action. Turn it into productivity. Allow it to get you up, get you back up, get you started, get you back started. Worry consumes the same bandwidth as productivity. It consumes the same energetic spectrum, strength, and clarity as productivity. The difference is it's a duplicative negative. Not only Does it create more interference and produce nothing, but it's wishing for what you don't want? Action is the antidote to anxiety. I will repeat that. Action is the antidote to anxiety, especially if aligned with what you want, what you desire, and with what's doing well, what's stable, and what you think it's going to be doing well. Instead of stressing about the upcoming events, situations, presentations, a speaker who drafts their slides early channels nervous energy, not excitement, into the preparation and the clarity. They worry about what it's going to be like instead of keep preparing. So many golfers or athletes that I work with get in their own way and never reach their potential. As you get older, you wonder why certain people who had all the talent in the world didn't make it, where the Tom Brady's of the world, drafted in the fourth round, are the GOATs. Because it is the preparation, alignment, of what's doing well, what's doing when you think is doing well, not the nervous energy. It's an excitement, not an anxiety. And action is the antidote to anxiety. It's practicing every day for a minimum amount of time, quantifying and measuring our project progress in 1,000 steps. Every worry contains a hidden task, a hidden action. Utilize gratitude, empathy, and accountability to find the light, the love, and the lesson, the hidden task, and ask yourself, what am I supposed to learn from it? What did I do, say, think, feel, and believe that I can learn from it? What did I do to be responsible to attract it or participate in a perception of it? And what am I supposed to learn from it? Every worry, all anxiety contains a hidden task, an action aligned with what's doing well, what's stable, and what you think is doing well. Once again, each time that you worry, list it out. See what clues you have of what is your worries. Look for the patterns of what makes you worry, and then make better choices by taking action in a divine direction. Create one action step for each of these worries and turn them from concern into movement. Nothing happens until it moves. Excitement is the same frequency as worry and anxiety. Change that concern into action to get you up, get you back up, get you back started, or get you there to where you want to be or better. Lesson 5, schedule your doubt. You run your calendar. I will teach all of you to be a student in the calendar. We've done a student in the calendar training. Happy to send you that training exercise guide along with this one or books. This is important to understand how to be a student of your calendar, how to schedule your doubt. You run your calendar. You pay attention to and give intention to the coincidences, the coinciding of your outcomes. It's the mathematical equation of luck that is inherent within the student of the calendar. And if you don't run your calendar, if you're not a student of your calendar, I promise you, your thoughts will run you and there will be no action. You will sit at home high, broke, on your mom's couch, unemployed, dreaming about what you want. And those thoughts will run you and you'll never get to where you want to be or better. So many executives that I work with, they schedule, you know, time, 15-minute blocks to process what they're worried about. They process it as part of their calendar. They give time to the reaction to their fear and the response to those reactions and processes, knowing doubt has a place to help them stay focused for the rest of the day. So schedule your worry blocks, schedule your anxiety blocks. Give it a minimum amount of time every day. Create a quantitative analysis of alignment, action, and adjustment in order to facilitate, to make easy what you want to do or better in your day. You can acknowledge fear without knowing it or obeying it. It doesn't matter what you're afraid of, because if you are afraid for any reason, we know the ego will evoke itself with a reaction to that fear. And then we can prepare for the response to that reaction. And so as we feel the need to be right, offended, separate, inferior, superior, anxious, frustrated, angry, guilty, resentful, any of these separate feelings, that reaction is natural. We can see the clues and the patterns, but now we make a better choice in the response to that reaction. And we stop in wisdom and faith and drop down to center to recollect, remind, and remember with our source, the omniscient, all-powerful, all-knowing source of everything for everyone. And then we roll back into our divine direction. Scheduling your doubt is a great process in order to facilitate the activity, the action, the movement that's necessary. go ahead, set a time in your calendar, be a student of it. You could even just put in your calendar for 5, 10, 15 minutes, call it overthinking. Let yourself process the overthinking and then get back to work. Don't get so busy working, you forget to make money. Don't get so busy thinking, you forget to make money. And then any doubt that arises, write it down and defer it into that block of time in which you have given it your attention and intention to create the coincidences that you want by aligning, taking action, and preparing for adjustment. In the preparation of adjustment is the place in your calendar that you have put and prepared for overthinking. Lesson 6, let your future self decide. As everybody knows, one of the favorite quotes that I have and mantras that I give myself beyond I am happy, I am healthy, I am wealthy, and I am worthy. What am I doing to interfere with it? Is be kind to your future self. One of the ways that we're kind to our future self beyond doing good deeds is to be kind to your future self and let your future self decide. We make better decisions when we zoom out, not in. We make better decisions when we zoom out emotionally. And this version of who we are, who has already succeeded, has more clarity, harmony, and focus than the one trying to control everything right now. So many times I make statements about where I want to be or better and finish it or conclude it with, it's done, it's done, it's done. I zoom out emotionally, giving myself a perspective of the version who has already succeeded. It's done, it's done, it's done. So many founders that I work with hesitate on a key hire. They hesitate on hiring until they ask, what would the future version of me do if revenue were double? Take, for example, our friend with 2,200 leads who hopefully will email me to help finance that business and guide and advise that business because it has the potential of what's doing well, what's stable, and what he thinks is doing well. He just needs people who sit in a situation that have already been there to ask for directions. That revenue for double and double and double. And that clarity shifts everything. It shifts what he does, says, thinks, feels, and believes. It's done, it's done, it's done. Letting his future self decide with aligning with what's doing well, stable, and what you think to do now. Taking action in the same trajectory, but preparing for adjustment. If you trust your future self's vision, you will trust your future self's decisions. I'll repeat that. If you trust your future self's vision, you will trust your future self's decisions. Knowing you're in a divine direction, by knowing what you want, who you can help, who can help you, and how best to get it done, to prioritize that overthinking, the antidote to overthinking, overwhelmness, and procrastination. Stop polishing your procrastination and make those decisions for your future self.
Beautiful. And thank you so much, Dave, for an incredible training, of course, here again today as we have the Stop Overthinking and Start Doing training. And for everybody that has joined us today, if you would like a guide, the guide and exercise, not only from today's training, but of course, I know David mentioned a few in there, whether it was being a student of your calendar and so on and so forth. So if you would like the guide and exercises from today's training, just make sure to reach out to David directly. David@dmeltzer.com. Once again, that is just David@dmeltzer.com. And now as we transition into what is the second half of this incredible training here today, it is my pleasure as we have a very special guest that's going to be joining us for the Q&A section. So for everybody that is joining us online, of course, as we are streaming everywhere, make sure to put your questions into the chat. And if you are live here in the Breakfast with Champions, the best room and community on Clubhouse, and you have a question today, please use the hand icon in the lower right-hand corner of your screen to request to join the stage. Or, of course, if you are already on stage and have a question, please just put a quick note in the room chat, and I will be happy to pass the microphone your way. But it is my pleasure to introduce a very, 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 very dear friend of ours. She is somebody that is a keynote speaker, not only hosting her own events here in Southern California, but of course, being hired to speak all across the world. She is a best-selling author. She's also the founder of Strong Heart Fitness. And one of the reasons that myself and David have fallen in love with Dr. Samantha Hart is because she leads, with no pun intended, with her heart. So it is lovely to welcome her up to the stage, and happy, happy Friday for everybody here on Clubhouse. You guys do not get the pleasure of seeing that beautiful smile, which is just beaming and lighting me up with energy, especially here on this Friday morning. But Dr. Samantha, how are you? It's good to see you.
Hi, I'm great. Thank you. I don't get tired of that sweet introduction, Nick. Thank you so much.
Oh my goodness. It's my pleasure. And ultimately, I'm really excited to have you here for this Q&A session. We got about 30 minutes and we have obviously our webinar going here live to everywhere in our community. And then I, on this side, have a Clubhouse and the Breakfast with Champions. So we got a bunch of live friends that are here with questions, and I'll just help continue to moderate and facilitate. But one of my favorite questions to ask, and I wanted to kick us off with the first one, it's very, very blanket statement. You're just going to think, oh, he just pulled this out of his butt. But I always know that you have so much activity, not only as a business owner, but of course with the clients that you serve, and even as a mom, you know, through everything with your kids and your family and so on and so forth. And I always like to keep up with this very active world that we live in, especially in terms of the lessons that we're all learning. And so that begs the question, as we get into the month of September here, what has been your most valuable lesson you've learned so far?
In this month?
In this month, or let's say the last week.
You know, it's interesting. I got back a week or so ago from an amazing trip throughout Europe with my family, and it was a spiritual experience. And I say that because historically I'm a planner, right? I call myself, among other things, a recovered perfectionist. And my husband's idea of a good time is to plan nothing. Yep. And I thought, What if I did that? You know, what if I went all throughout Europe with a 6 and 10-year-old in a car, driving from place to place, not knowing which place we were going to, or not having a single hotel booked? What if I did that? What would happen? You know, would I become unwound? And what would I have to come up against? I'm happy to report that I did it, and it was amazing. Now, there is a caveat. There is always a caveat. Little things, practices that are rituals to me here about my own, I would argue not even self-care, I would say soul care, became wobbly. And I'll give you a really easy example. You know, we think when we go to the airport, we can't have any liquids, they're going to throw them out, right? So normally I walk around with a giant stainless steel water bottle that keeps my water really cold. It has a straw because for some reason, if it has those things, I will drink a ton of water through the day. Otherwise, I might drink a fraction. Okay. Did I pack that water bottle in my suitcase, even though I couldn't put it in my carry-on? I did not. So I had this amazing experience on the one hand, letting go of all these things, but I didn't take that little thing with me that's so small. And I was really dehydrated. You know, the transition coming back to the States with the time difference really got me good, you know? And I thought, oh my gosh, you know? So there's not just the rituals in the place that I'm comfortable. There's the transference, and more than that, the integration of these rituals, especially as I start to travel more, not just with family, but with my career, that I must remember to embody. And so it was a really valuable thing to be reminded of.
That's beautiful. Well, thank you so much. And I love the lesson to get us started here. I see some of the questions starting to populate. I got hands raised on Clubhouse. I see the chat's going crazy. So let's start to give the people what they want, which is a little bit of Q&A. And I'm going to kick things off with a question coming from Colleen. She's asking, do you treat time as something to invest, spend, or protect? And how has this evolved throughout your career?
What a What an amazing question. You know, when I look at this, Colleen, the thing I want to lean toward is protect. But the truth is, there's a combination of all three, right? I think to some extent, how we spend our time is how we are investing our time. Are we investing it in old decisions, old thinking, old patterns, old behaviors? Are we investing it in ourselves, in our businesses, right? At any given time, how we spend it is how we're investing into it. And similarly, how we spend it and invest into it is the level at which we are protecting it. And so I think those three words are very powerful, and they're also very much intertwined. But it's interesting to be asked that question. I think time is something to cherish. You know, I think protecting, you know, it's a powerful word, but it also feels like we're under threat, you know, if we have to protect it. And I wonder if we could shift that thinking to nourishing it. How do we nourish? How do we spend our time so intentionally that we're filled up and we can truly serve from wholeness rather than lack?
That's absolutely beautiful. Thank you so much. And Colleen, thank you for the incredible question. And I'm going to show some love to our friends on Clubhouse, as we have a lot of people who are patiently waiting. Specifically, I'm going to kick things off by passing the mic over to the lovely Mitra, who has been patiently waiting. Mitra, happy Friday. It's always good to see you here. Thank you so much for joining us. Unmute yourself and kick us off with the first question from Clubhouse.
Good morning, Nick, and good morning, Dr. Samantha. So my question is, so nowadays through social media, TikTok and Instagram, there's so many information online about health and wellness. And sometimes it's just so hard to know what is true, what is actually good for me and what is not. So how do you recommend people navigate conflicting or contradicting health information online?
What an amazing question. So let me give you an anecdotal story literally from yesterday. Okay. One of my coaching clients and I had a call, and she's in her 60s and she's had different body pains showing up in the time we've been working together. And she was trying so hard to make sense of it. And then she was sharing with me all the things that she's read about the sneakers that she's been using. And I listened to everything she said. And I said, you know, I could tell you a lot of things about this brand of sneaker, and I'm happy to share them. But at the end of the day, whatever shoes you wear for walking are completely contingent on your body, your foot and ankle structure. If you have flat feet, are the sneakers encouraging more pronation? Are they throwing your foot into a more unstable position by the physics and design of the shoe? Because if they are, we would probably want to pick a shoe that's more supportive for your body based on your symptoms and what's showing up. So information is one piece of the puzzle. Then doing research around the type of practitioner that you want to hire, interviewing them, trusting that the way you feel with them, which should be a feeling of I'm being listened to, I am being validated, this person is highly educated, they really seem to know what they're doing, and they're constantly thinking about the landscape of research and my clinical presentation and how they can best curate the response, the exercise program, the protocol for what is uniquely going on for me in my body. I hope that answers your question.
Mitra, does that help bring clarity to what you're looking for?
Yes. Beautiful. Yes, thank you so much.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Mitra. Next up, we have another friend on Clubhouse. We have Mike, who has been patiently waiting. So, Mike, it's good to see you here. Happy Friday. Unmute yourself and fire away, my friend.
Beautiful. Good morning. How are we doing?
Hi. Great. How are you?
Doing good. Doing good. Question is, how do you create sustainable habits when you're trying to balance work, family, and everything in between? What are you doing personally to kind of put those in place to make those are non-negotiables for yourself?
When I became a mom, so I have a almost 7-year-old and a 10-year-old. When I became a mother, I was really taken to my knees. It was something I wanted my whole life, and yet it overwhelmed me beyond imagination, you know, and I could see how myself, my highest self, could get completely buried under the obligation of caring for this child. And I thought, what am I going to do about this so I don't lose who I am and the way that I've been caring for myself, because I'm actually going to need that more. So that was the beginning of this system that I put in place. And if you've ever read Atomic Habits, it's such a practical approach to building sustainable habits. So if you haven't read the book, I've read it several times. I highly recommend it. One of the lines in the book says, we don't rise to the level of our goals. We fall to the level of our, what did they say? We don't rise to the level of our goals. We fall to the level of our systems. And I was like, oof, I have a goal of self-care as a mother. What's my system? So the system is, on Sundays, I look to the week ahead and I go, what's on deck? What are the things, you know, the work things, the doctor appointments, the things in the outside world that are tugging me away from myself? And then where do I fit in? And I've been putting myself on my schedule for 10 years. Every day. The other thing that I do is at night I take a personal inventory. And what I mean by that is I'm 16 years sober from drugs and alcohol. And so instead of just a gratitude list, it's become really robust over the years. So I write some things that went well, some things that could have gone better, ways that I lived in alignment with my ideal self, blessings of the day, and intentions for tomorrow. So by the time I get to intentions, I don't always remember on a Tuesday night what I have coming up on Wednesday. So I go and look in the evening for the next day. And it's another opportunity to scan the day and go, did I set aside any time for meditation, for a walk in nature, for cuddling with my dog, for playing with my kids, for exercising? And if I didn't, let's fix that. That's just one of the systems that I put in place. But remember that the world is asking us to move away from who we are and to produce. And so if you're already feeling like you can't sustain, that's just a sign that you've been pulled too far away from who you are. And the non-negotiable is, I have to do things every day that make me feel exactly like who I truly am. And from there, I will be a much happier and more productive human being, father, friend.
That's beautiful. And Mikey, I know that definitely brings some clarity to your question. So thank you, as always, for the incredible question. And Dr. Sam, before we move to our next friend, when you talk about putting yourself into your calendar every day, I think it's beautiful that you also have, and for our friends on Clubhouse that don't have the visual, it is the big ass calendar. And that is from Jesse Itzler that you have over your shoulder right there. And I want to use that as an opportunity to ask a question. And that question is when you are planning for much more further in advance, right? Mm-hmm. Something like utilizing the big ass calendar, which for our friends that don't have a visual, or if you're unfamiliar with the concept, Jesse releases this calendar every single year. And Sam, please jump in if I'm misspeaking or if I'm wrong. But it's literally a calendar of 365 days. So you can plan out the entire year, be able to see goals compound against themselves, et cetera, rather than just looking at a month by month. And so what I want to understand from you is those systems are beautiful. Right. But when you take that from, okay, I'm looking at more weekly or daily, to I'm looking at my big ass calendar and my whole year. Right. How are you making that a priority for something like that and that system? not mm-hmm. just daily or the weekly.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up because this is the first year I've gotten his calendar. So it's a newer thing in my daily, weekly, yearly ritual. Jesse Itzler is such an inspiration, not just to me as a keynote speaker and somebody I aspire to be like on stage, but by the way he lives. And he leaves nothing on the table. And so in seeing people that you admire on the internet, you know, one of the things is if you can't be in close proximity to them, studying them, what is it about the way they're living and that they're doing? What are their systems for having this big, beautiful life that really does prioritize fun and play and rest and adventure? So this year, instead of going into 2025 with a list of goals, I said, I'm going to pick a word for the year. And my word was adventure, which it's never been before. And between that and this calendar, I thought, okay, well, adventure is not necessarily my weekly self-care, but adventure is travel. Adventure is spontaneity. Adventure is also emotional, by the way. Not every adventure I've gone on this year has been physical or location-based. It's been an emotional adventure.
And
I thought, man, I'm going to get his calendar so that I can look to the whole year and not get to 6, 7, 8 months in and go, I didn't really have that many adventures. I've got to plan out much more ambitiously and in advance my very adventurous year. And so I got the calendar and you can see there's a lot of sticky notes. And honestly, it needs to get updated because there's been a lot of travel this year, even to small places and states I've never visited. Not everything is exotic, but it's stuff that I probably would have talked myself off the ledge to not do prior to this year and having that word. So there's levels of systems, right? And I know you know this, Nick, right? The Nick of Guam, you and Dave have the most unbelievable system because of the travel that is required. You have to look ahead so far. So
absolutely.
A wonderful, wonderful experiment from this year.
I love it. And, you know, I know because you're such an intentional human being that you're already starting to plant some of those seeds as you figure out what is going to be your new word for 2026. As of course, we're going to go to bed tonight, blink, and then wake up tomorrow and it's going to be New Year's Eve. But that's neither here nor there. As we continue rocking and rolling, we are going into the fourth quarter, ladies and gents. So I'm going to do a quick reset of the room here. Of course, this is another edition of David Meltzer's Free Friday Training. And we are blessed with a very, very special guest, Dr. Samantha Hart, as she is guiding us through the second half here with some Q&A. So as a reminder for everybody that's online, make sure to put your questions into the chat. And of course, if you're live here on Clubhouse, make sure to request to join the stage using the hand icon in the lower right-hand corner of your screen. Or if you're already on stage, just put a quick note in the room chat and I will pass the mic your way. And without further ado, although we do not have David Meltzer here, we do have his Meltzer double, which is Eric Meltzer. No family affiliation, just kindred spirits at their heart. And speaking of heart, we have Dr. Samantha Hart. Man, look at this. This is amazing. With that said, Eric Meltzer, what's up, my friend? Happy Friday. What do you got for us today?
Hey, cool. Yeah, thank you so much. Really appreciate it. So the question I have, or I would love some feedback, is when Dave was talking about the five talking points, the thought that comes to my mind, the thought process that I get in is, I need to do these things. And it kind of comes from like it doesn't come from a mindset of abundance. It's just, I can't not be a student of my calendar. I can't not be that. And the place that I want to get to is that I love that I get to, but I find it's really hard to ingrain that in myself. So I would love to know. I would love to know, Samantha, is that like what can you recommend to kind of ingrain that? Like, it's not that I have to do it. It's that I love that I get to have the opportunity to do something and to learn to love things rather than dread.
Can I coach you for a second?
Please.
Okay. what age is that part of you that feels a ton of pressure and resistance against having to do all this stuff? When did you learn that?
Yeah, it's a really good question. Very, very young age, where I learned to try to keep myself, do whatever I can to keep myself safe, because I'd never felt safe at home. And so I have aversion to, like, you know, to suffering, I guess. So, but yeah, very, very young age.
So if you could just be with that part right now that doesn't feel safe and feels like the only safe way is to have to, and you could let him know that you're here now and that there's no threat and that he doesn't have to. He can also choose not to. But what would you want him to know now that you are in a position of safety right here in this moment? What could you tell him?
Yeah, just that it's safe to go. It's safe to go, and there's no need to be afraid. Yeah.
That's the work. If you don't get to that part of the work, you're bypassing what's begging to be addressed and healed. You're trying to turn a switch and go from threatened and unsafe and survival mode into radical acceptance and love and appreciation. You can get there, but not if you jump over the deeper spiritual work that's required. And it's not something that has to take a really long time. You were just so insightful. You knew exactly where it was coming from. But if that younger part of you is the one that's kicking and screaming and sitting in the seat of CEO and trying to run your life still because it still feels threatened, you're not going to be at peace and be able to make that shift with ease. So there's just some deeper work there to do. And then it will be so much easier to go, wow, I'm really lucky. I'm so safe. And I get to make choices that are conscious today. And as a grown adult, and none of this is a have to. None of this is. And I feel that now. I understand that deeply. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, that totally does. Yeah, that's been a big part of just the inner work journey, that's for sure. Yeah, I mean, you pretty much hit the nail on the head.
Good, I'm glad. Yeah, it's tough work to do, you know, but it is the work. It is the work.
Thank you so much, as always, Eric, not only for the question, but for your vulnerability and your transparency. It helps all of us not only continue to grow, but continue to learn. So, of course, I always like to illuminate that. Much love to you, my friend. Have an incredible rest of your Friday and weekend ahead. And next up, we have a very repeat offender in a very positive way. We have David's two favorite letters in the alphabet, which is GG, who's coming to us with the next question. So, GG, unmute yourself. What do you got for us?
Hello, happy Friday. So, Samantha, because we have you here, I want to ask a practical question. Based on your experience and what you observe, what's the one mistake and one change people can make to actually improve their life, their health, their relationship, and things like that?
I am a very holistic practitioner. So spirituality is at the center of my work in the world and how I coach other people. So from that lens, here's what I would say. I continue to coach people who in some area of their lives are drowning in guilt, regret, or shame over something. And it often presents like this. Let's say they're in a relationship that isn't the best. Other parts of their life are great, but it's not the best. Maybe it's a marriage they've been in forever. The through line in their head is, why did I stay? Oh, I should have left 20 years ago. Oh, I'm such an idiot. Okay. And it is so dangerous to live in self-ridicule, because you take away all your power about what you can do now. And you're in an emotional prison. So what I tell people when they're in a trap of critical self-talk is to shift from critical to compassionate. So the simple shift, the action to take is instead of why didn't I leave him? Why didn't I leave the job? Why didn't I leave him? 20 years ago, when I'm so sure I should have, why didn't I? I wonder why. What was going on at the time? And all of a sudden, you're curious, you're open, and you start to really understand all the factors that played in to why you stayed. And then you ground yourself in the present and say, gosh, I get that now. And so I'm not going to spend time and energy beating myself up and feeling stuck today because I'm not stuck today. So now I get to go, what am I willing to take radical responsibility for right now, knowing why I made that decision then, but that I can make a new one. And by the way, that doesn't mean leaving your marriage necessarily, right? Radical responsibility could just be, I am no longer going to feed that narrative and give it energy and attention and focus on it. I'm just going to focus on as many things that bring me joy today as possible and do as many of those as I can. So compassionate curiosity meets radical responsibility.
That's very beautiful, Dr. Sam. And we have time for one final question here as we got about 5 minutes left on the clock of this incredible training in Q&A session. And thank you, Gigi, for the very deep, well, actually, it really wasn't that deep of a question. You just took it there, which was perfect. So I want to thank you. But thank you, Gigi, as always, for being here and bringing a great question. And for our final question of the day, I'm coming back and we got a repeat offender in Colleen, but she is just dropping gems this morning. So her question is, how can I maintain emotional transparency without feeling emotionally drained? And Dr. Samantha Hart, with leading with your heart, why don't you close us out with this final question?
Oof. Okay. So this is so important because I've done a lot of work around this in my own life. If you know the work of Brené Brown, one of the things she talks about is hotwiring intimacy, which is this oversharing from an unhealed place to be seen and loved and validated. And boy, did I used to do that when I was younger. I learned it in my house that had no boundaries. You know, you just shared everything. And I so desperately wanted people to understand me and love me by my sharing. And not only would it backfire, but it was often being shared with people who hadn't earned the right to receive it. So it was extremely draining, right? So if you're sharing something and you're questioning why you're sharing it, that's kind of a good first sign to go, maybe this isn't ready to be shared, right? Because we need people to earn the right to hold space for us. And we have to try to be conscious enough to share from a healed place. If something is very, very fresh and you're sharing about it to be transparent, you don't have the insight necessarily in those early days and weeks about what's going on to be safeguarded around whatever the response might be. Whereas if some weeks and months go by and you've extracted the lessons from what's happened and you've been able to see it from multiple angles and you feel pretty comfortable with kind of what happened and why, then no matter how anyone receives it, it's not going to have you coming undone, right? And the other thing I would say here is that if I didn't say the word God or spirit or universe, I would be doing myself and you guys a disservice, right? So I think the more spiritually fit we are, it's like we're walking around with a beautiful invisible shield around us, where what we say goes out, but things aren't piercing back at us, sucking our energy, taking our life force, because we're deeply protected in this larger loving energy. So I think, what is our connection to God? Where is our consciousness as we're being emotionally transparent? And at what point in our healing journey are we before we're sharing, are some things to consider.
Well, I have nothing but the best things to say about Dr. Samantha Hart. And I think everybody in our community, after having a nice little Q&A session this morning, understands why. Dr. Samantha Hart, thank you so much for joining me this morning and being a part of this and being of service to our incredible community. Doctor, it is always such a pleasure. You have such an incredible Friday and weekend ahead. Mwah. Lots of love. And we will see you soon. All right. Bye-bye now.